Hello and welcome to the Chris Allen podcast, brought to you in association with WCRFM, which you can hear on 101.8 or via WCRFM.com or by telling your smart speaker to play WCRFM. And later on this year, we have the exciting news that we will soon be going on to DAB radio as well. In this week's podcast, Gareth Morgan will be talking to us. He's from the Birmingham and Black Country Wildlife Trust. Opportunities for involvement, especially for young people in the 18 to 24-year-old range. Councillor Chris Burden is the Cabinet Member for Education, Skills and Work. He'll be talking about the value of math skills to help us budget during this cost of living, how apprenticeships are making a difference, also the need to highlight homophobic attacks so the police know the scale of what's happening by ringing 101 to report anything that you might experience or you might see. Councillor Beverley Mamenabadi, who's a Cabinet Member for Children and Young People, is looking forward to half-term activities and also stepping down from politics this May. Councillor Obeida Ahmed is the Cabinet Member for Resources and Digital City, and she'll be talking about the rollout of small cells technology across the city. And John Denley, the City of Wolverhampton Council Public Director of Health, will be updating us on the need to be tested for HIV, the health pop-ups and the positive impact of COVID vaccinations. I have to note, though, that the opportunity to take part in the lifestyle survey has now ended, but it will be shaping policies as we move forward. First of all, though, here's Gareth Morgan, who's the Education and Engagement Lead at the Birmingham and Black Country Wildlife Trust.
Well, I suppose my job's trying to connect people with nature all across Birmingham and the Black Country. So, yeah, we basically are the first urban wildlife trust just over 40 years ago. We were the first ones to really sort of pay attention to the wildlife in the cities, I suppose, and, try and get as many people to sort of improve their relationship with nature. We look after wild spaces and help other landowners sort of manage their green spaces better for wildlife, try and get people taking action for nature, and try and improve all of our health and well-being by getting out there enjoying the natural world.
When you say Birmingham Black Country, you immediately think of open rural spaces, do you? The green gems are often quite hidden.
Well, that's the great thing. You know, actually, our urban landscape is actually incredibly diverse. Some of the best wildlife sites that we have in our area are actually industrial sites that have been recolonized by nature. So you think of some of the canals or the clay pits or that kind of thing. So actually, there's an incredible diversity of spaces. And although people do tend to think about the countryside for wildlife, actually there's just as many amazing species living alongside us here in the city as there are out there.
How did you get into doing this job? You know, you obviously got a passion for it. So what started you off down this road?
Yeah, well, actually, I moved away from the Midlands when I was young, and then when I came back, I just started exploring because I realised I didn't really know my local patch as well as I should. So I just started. I joined the Wildlife Trust, and I got there like a Welcome to Wildlife guide, which is like a guide to all the best green spaces and wild spaces in the area. I just started visiting them one after another, just to kind of build up a picture of this place that we live in, really. So I really enjoyed exploring, and I was lucky enough to get a job with them later on.
So you're hooked, and obviously other people can be hooked as well when they want to be as well. And everything's on your website, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so bbcwildlife.org.uk. So we have information about different green spaces to explore, different events that we have coming up, and different ways for people to get involved and discover the wildlife on their doorstep.
And Debbie's been exploring your website. She always does.
I have. I've been having a good old nosy. I've got a question, though, just thinking about wildlife, urban spaces, and then bringing it a bit closer to home. What kind of recommendations do you have for us, living in our spaces, to encourage wildlife to come into our space?
Well, there's all kinds of things we can do. Obviously, if you're lucky enough to have a garden and a bit of green space that you're looking after yourself, then a lot of people like to feed the birds, or maybe you could let the grass grow a little bit longer, try and build up a bit of habitat for invertebrate life. If you've really got space, then maybe you could put a pond in your garden. That's probably about one of the best things you can do to encourage wildlife. Incredible how quickly a pond will colonize, and how you'll have frogs and all kinds of invertebrates kind of swimming around there before you know it. So yeah, if you've got that kind of space, then obviously take action in in your own garden. But then, you know, there are things we can do in our schools. You know, we've got lots of opportunity to try and help children connect with nature by putting up bird boxes and bat boxes, maybe a bird feeder in your school grounds. If you're lucky enough to be able to have a little bit of a wildflower meadow, then, you know, if you've got a bit of space, these are the kind of things you can put in. So there's a lot of things you can do on a very small scale.
And I noticed on your website, if you join up for a newsletter or if you become a member, you do give away a free bird box.
That's right. Yep. Mm.
Incentivized. Yeah. There you go. That's what we need. Now, one of the things we're going to talk about, obviously, is opportunities for young people. You're being supported by the Wolves at Work scheme through the New Opportunities Fund that's there, the Cities Fund. What's the kind of ways in which young people can get involved with the project you're running?
Well, that's right. In a couple of weeks, starting on Monday, the 27th of February, we're running a tools use course at the Wildside Activity Centre in Whitmore Rains. And this is basically part of our Nature Academy program. So basically what we do, we're a registered training provider with the Open College Network West Midlands. And so young people 16 to 25 living in Wolverhampton can sign up for free. It'll run every day that week from 10 till 2:30. We can cover people's travel expenses and provide refreshments as well. And basically what they do is they learn the skills to manage green spaces by learning how to use different tools. So this is, it's an outdoor training course. So, you know, it's for people who are going to be happy working outdoors and, you know, all weathers. it's fun. You know, you're going to get active, you're going to meet other young people, and you're going to learn how to use different tools like spades, forks, loppers, billhooks, bow saws, sledgehammers, axes, that kind of thing.
I bet you've been having fun with the health and safety, haven't you, on the and the risk assessments?
My colleague Neil is very diligent on those things. We will be taking good care of the young people on the course. But yeah, really, it's a chance to kind of actually explore a little bit, you know, maybe some spaces that you might not know, and learn how to look after these spaces, because there are so many amazing places around Birmingham Black Country, but we need more people taking action. And to do that, we need more people to have the skills. So this could be a really good opportunity for someone who, you know, is looking to get maybe employment in working outdoors or landscaping or working in the conservation area. You get a qualification at the end of it, a level 1 qualification, so you can put that on your CV. But mainly as well, you just kind of enjoy being outside and, you know, discovering a new space and helping to look after it, really.
And even if you don't go on to see that as a career, just the general learning you'll do through that would be fantastic. And obviously it builds up your confidence, doesn't it? Anything like that makes you feel better about yourself.
That's right. Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a big link between, you know, time spent in nature and our well-being. Mm. And this applies to, you know, everybody, really. But especially, you know, for young people, it can help to kind of connect you to the place that we're living in. So, you know, whether you've lived here all your life or you're new to the area, it's kind of connecting with these kind of spaces and these other young people who are, you know, interested in the outdoors.
And also thinking about the future of our ecology and our conservation. If we're getting young people interested now, they're our legacy.
Well, that's it. And we need the next generation, you know, to come forward and to be really active, you know, even more active than previous generations have been. We've got climate change, we've got the biodiversity crisis, you know, we're under pressure, wildlife's under pressure, but at the same time, we need nature more than we ever did before. You know, that the sad fact is actually we're less connected with nature than probably any previous generation. So you've got to get out there and explore it and learn about it and enjoy it, really.
And that can help our general well-being, can't it? Our everything about us, the fresh air is good for us, the activity is good, the exercise is good, the mental well-being stuff as well. So it really can get people involved. And obviously the purpose of the Wolves at Work campaign is to get young people in the age group you mentioned there, give them opportunities to take the next step in their careers or to get work and get into training courses. So how can people get involved? How can they find out more?
Yeah, so you can look at our website, bbcwildlife.org.uk/events. and you'll see the course that's coming up at the Wildside Activity Centre. So you can just sign up on there, or you can email us at info@bbcwildlife.org.uk for a bit more information. We'll happily give you a ring and talk through what's involved. This is funded by the Wolverhampton City Ideas Fund, and it's particularly targeting young people who are unemployed, or you know, people who aren't in education training. So yeah, it could be a really good sort of step towards employment. So just get in touch and we'll tell you more about it.
That's Gareth Morgan of the Birmingham and Black Country Wildlife Trust. The other voice you heard was my colleague Debbie Hookston. If you want to know more, then do go to the show notes for this podcast and you can see the link there as well. Councillor Chris Burton is the Cabinet Member for Education, Work and Skills at the City of Wolverhampton Council. When I caught up with him, first of all, I asked him about the changes in schools around admissions and how children qualify for schools. And I said to him, is this really around being transparent so that parents know what's going on?
Yeah, it's just so parents know what we're doing. Ultimately, the change isn't anything for parents to worry about. It's a really quick change. It's what we're inserting is into the hierarchy of what gets you a school place is the staff of teachers. Children of staff. Now, the reason we're doing that is because almost all of our academies have that as their policy anyway.
Right.
So we're really behind the curve, and it really does cause us problems with retention of staff.
And because it's difficult if they're going to different other schools, I suppose.
Precisely. It's hard to drop your kid off in the school rush traffic and then get to your own school in the school rush traffic. So all it is saying that they have the thing. It won't make any difference to our admissions criteria because the people who are going to take this up are really, really minimal.
Yeah.
But the change it will make to those minimal lives is massive.
Right,
so
right.
While only a few, you know, tens of people will take this up,
yeah,
the change it will make to their lives is huge, and the change it will make to our staff retention.
And if parents' perspective, you know, are looking at schools where their children might go, where do they find out what that the admission criteria is? Is that on the council website or is that the school itself?
Yeah, so all admissions criteria for council schools is on the council website. Now, we do work closely with our academies, but they are allowed to maintain their own admissions.
Right.
So if the school you're looking at is an academy, do check their admissions policy as well. But they're fairly universal in Wolverhampton. Yeah. We've got good partnerships.
Now, I was intrigued by this. Boost your math skills to help boot the financial pinch. And I understand how that's there. Is this sort of, you know, if we weren't listening properly at school, it might be worth listening now?
Well, I don't know if I listened properly in maths when I was at school either. Ultimately, what we're saying is people are struggling to budget at the moment. It's a hard time budgeting, and we noticed we're putting out saying this is how you can budget, but we weren't explaining the maths behind it.
Right.
And we realized that actually when some people do have fewer math skills, they were finding it really difficult to budget. So this is just those booster courses that people can get on at the college in partnership with adult education, making sure that actually people have those skills to take control of their own finances, and ultimately gives people a lot of independence back as well.
It does, and we do make so many assumptions, about people, and it does bring stress and anxiety. You know, there's enough stress and anxiety around with cost of living without actually thinking, well, if I could just do that, I might be able to save the family some money.
Yeah, and it is that thing, it is simple skills that people put in. If you lack those simple skills, it's hard for us because I have those simple skills, and when you've got them, you find it hard to process. But when people need them, we as a council should be caring and make sure that people can get those skills and have that independence, that financial independence.
So it's Adult Education Services, the place to go to. So mm-hmm. It's www.aes.wolverhampton.gov.uk, or you can ring on 01902 558180. That's Wolverhampton 558180. I'll put all those in the show notes for the podcast this week as well, in case people miss it. They can find out on our website too. But yeah, get your math sorted.
Yeah.
Without having to take your socks and shoes off and count on your toes as well. A big priority of the council has been looking at 18, 24-year-olds out of work.
Yeah.
Apprenticeships are a way by which that moved forward. I think you've had quite a successful week, haven't you, in terms of the different events to support people into apprenticeships?
Yeah, so I met four of our apprentices that we hire at the council or at Wolverhampton Homes. And actually, they're doing amazing work. And they're taking people who may have been out of work.
Yeah.
And I met two lads. One was trained as an electrician, gas, etc. And then they will be able to get good quality jobs afterwards. These are proper meaningful apprenticeships.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just manual work as well. I met two girls at the council who were in digital, who were in communication. So taking those skills that they may have learned at school, some of them may have even learned at university, and saying, here's a practical application, come and do it as the council. And ultimately, we want to take on as many of those people as possible when they complete those apprenticeships as well.
And many businesses have talked about how children are not sort of ready for life, not got the skills for life here. And the apprenticeship scheme helps bridge that gap.
Yeah, so these ones are focused at the 18 to 24. There are 16 plus apprenticeships as well, which are fantastic opportunities. But these 18 to 24, they take those people, they're out of school, they've not got the work experience, and they can be earning and learning. And I know that's the common sort of phrase that gets used, but it really is important. And those four apprentices I spoke to from Wolverhampton Homes and the Council had found it a really fantastic opportunity and were actually really passionate about having careers in our city. And I think that's something I'm keen on, getting our kids the skills they need to work for us and make our city a better place. That's what it's about.
And are you making some impact now on those figures? Because I know when I talked to the leader a year or so ago now that the 18 to 24 year olds, the figures were pretty dire, weren't they?
Yeah.
Are you making some progress?
So we're starting to see some progress. Now, it's a difficult one to see progress on, because we can put all of these people in there, but we've got to motivate people to apply for those jobs.
Yeah.
So we maintain Wolves Workbox, where those live jobs are. And there are live jobs out there. I'd implore, please go and look at it. If you don't know if that's for you, please get in touch with these employers as well, and they can walk it through you, because we've got these resources there. We've put everything in place we can. Now we need people to take them up, and we're trying our best, but we need that support as well.
So just go to Wolves Workbox. That's the place to go to.
Yeah.
All the opportunities are there.
One-stop shop.
Absolutely. Now, it's nice when we see schools being praised, and there's lots of them around the city. It's always good to give a shout-out, though, to individual ones. Manor Primary has had a high-achieving school. It's been recognised as being that, and it's got outstanding across the board, really. You must be really pleased and encouraging of the team when you see that.
It's one thing to see a school that's outstanding, and then another thing to see a school that's outstanding without any caveats whatsoever. This is Ofsted really saying this is the best of the best. This is where we want education to be. And ultimately, that's what we want education to be in Wolverhampton. The people at Manor Primary, the head gave me a wonderful tour round. It was amazing. The kids were so engaged. They were doing so many different activities. And it was really a fascinating and really inspirational place to be. Ultimately, our aim is to get 90% of schools in Wolverhampton to outstanding or good.
Yeah,
that would put us way above the national average, and do you know what, we're on track to do it as well.
Well, that sounds good. I what was pleasing in this as well is that pupils with SEND, special education needs and disabilities, are included as part of everything else as well, not separated out. They're a core to the school's work.
And I saw it in the classrooms, and it was a fascinating piece of work that they'd done, and it was really being effective, and it was including people, but also making more well-rounded adults. When those kids grow up, they'll have grown up with people with special education needs. This won't be a surprise, and they'll know how to be caring, conscientious adults as well.
Now, on a more personal note, really, it is obviously LGBT plus History Month, and we've talked before about homophobia when you've personally been subject to that as well. And I noticed that still out in society, people are homophobic. Lack of understanding, is it ignorance? What is it? You know, and how do you deal with it when you're subject to it yourself personally?
It's this question. At this point, there's genuine ignorance, which I think must be in the minority at the moment. It must be very hard to go around modern Britain and be tolerant, intolerant, because you genuinely don't know. And I think that's the thing. We've got to have those conversations with people.
Right.
We've got to reach out and bridge those gaps where people genuinely don't know. It's like, or maybe we don't say that word anymore. We do that constructively.
Yeah.
But there are problems with just willing homophobia, racism in our city. And they're things that we need to come down on. And I think that's part of why we're doing so many things for LGBT History Month. And indeed, we do for International Women's Day and Black History Month in October as well. And getting that message out there and saying, well, actually, We're part of society, and indeed have been for 4,000 years, and we will be for another 4,000. So if you don't like it, we are just going to have to get on and get on with it.
And if you're subject to a homophobic attack, whether it's personally on you or you witness it, you may not be a member of that particular community, what can you actually do?
Yeah, so, I mean, my phone's littered with police crime numbers where I've reported things, and ultimately nothing's ever come of any of them.
Mm.
But it is the case of having it recorded and saying, no, this is happening, this is a serious issue in our society. I think we hear the word allyship come up a lot more often now, and it is actually that LGBT History Month isn't for gay people, it's for everyone. It's saying to straight people, actually, this is part of your history as well. This is Wolfrunian history, because there's always been gay Wolfrunians, there's always been gay British people. This is British history, and this is why we're talking about it, because we need to raise more people who are willing to call out unjust things when we see them. And I think we're getting there as a city. We are.
And is this one of those situations again where actually if the number of reported incidents is going up, it's almost a good sign because it means more people are making the effort to report them.
So it's really hard to tell because so much in the past, these were underreported things. People didn't report them because they were, A, scared the police might not do it. And of course, back in the 1980s, it was illegal to even mention gay people in schools. So there's the balance between if we're seeing more people willing to report it, that's a good thing because it's showing that people are coming out and reporting these things are wrong. But it makes it hard to differentiate. Is there actually genuinely a spike in these crimes in the West Midlands? And there does seem to have been a spike in violent crimes against the LGBT community, which right. needs to be stamped out.
And so people become aware of anything, please report it straight away.
Do it on 101. Do it on the... online app. You can do these things really easy. You can do them anonymously.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's useful because the police need to know that these things are happening, because if the police simply don't know, nothing is going to be done and they can't even track how many are happening.
That's the Cabinet Member for Education, Work and Skills at the City of Wolverhampton Council, Councillor Chris Burden. Yes, you see anything that affects you or affects other people, then do tell the police. Ring 101. Councillor Beverley Mamenabardi, I think, has got the best job in the Cabinet. She looks after the children and young people portfolio. I caught up with her and I put it to her that nowadays it's almost expected that there's going to be activities for children in the holidays.
Yeah, so making sure that children have opportunities to thrive in Wolverhampton is one of our council plan's top priorities. So, yes, it is absolutely embedded. If you look around other local authorities as well, some local authorities only provide activities over the holidays during summer, Easter and Christmas. They don't do the half-term holidays. Sorry, you might be able to hear my dog on air, so he's trying to go out. Apologies. So some of the local authorities only do that. That's because we only get given government funding for Christmas, summer and Easter. But our council know that children need to have things to do in half term as well. They need to have things to do after school. So we have something called the YES strategy, which is the youth engagement strategy. And we use that money, which is an additional top up of our own council funds, to fund these activities. We know how important it is. You hear about youth crime and stuff like that. Kids need things to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, you know, that it helps them grow as young people. Their socialising is really, really important on these activities as well, because that was one of the big things that was lost during lockdown, wasn't it? That lack of socialisation.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I've not spoken about is that during all of these activities that run over half-term holidays, kids get a meal there as well. So you can think of children, it's not just free school meal, children now being affected by the cost of living, it's families who work as well. Yeah. So that food that's provided is really an essential lifeline to families who might be struggling. You know, it's an expensive day out to pay to go and do things. You know, I was looking at, probably shouldn't mention the names on air, but different days out, you know, paying to go and do them. And it's a huge cost. It is a huge cost, and that there are a small charges on some of the activities that providers are putting on, but the ones that the council fund over half term are free. So I'd encourage anyone, you know, if you're looking for things to do, go to yowolves.co.uk.
That's become embedded in our brains now, where to go to and look for things as well. Obviously, this is going to positively impact on the mental health of children and young people, and Mental Health Week for Children is just ending, and that's been a very successful week as well.
Yeah, so we've had lots of activities going on for Children's Mental Health Week, and I think we underestimate how much children and young people are affected by things going on in the lives that affect adults too. So I recently met with our youth council, and every single one of those young people knew what the cost of living crisis was, which shocked me, if I'm honest, because we think about it in terms of adults not being able to afford petrol, food, that sort of thing. But every single child in the room knew what the cost of living crisis was.
Right.
They talked about things affecting them, like parents not taking them shopping anymore because they're throwing sweets in the basket, which seem like trivial things. But actually, if you think that's stopping children from going out with their spending time, quality time, even if it is just at the supermarket with parents, and these things were bothering children and actually worrying them.
And I love this way by which children could wear different colours in order to express the way that they feel. And that demands a certain openness about your feelings, isn't it? So orange and yellow about being connected and loved, red because you're angry, green because you're chilled, etc.
Yeah, so I was green. That was just a snapshot in time, though, because I had quite a easy day on Friday. But I think that there is something about, as adults, you know, we can find it difficult to talk about the way that we feel. And we know children can as well. So we wanted to give children the opportunity to express themselves and their feelings by doing something a little bit fun, doing something a little bit different.
And these needs go on, so there are resources available at childrensmentalhealthweek.org.uk, even though the week's sort of over. This is an ongoing support.
Yeah, and then there are other resources too. So if you know, children and young people in Wolverhampton or parents are noticing their children are struggling, the resources on yowolves.co.uk, there's a section on there for support services and mental health and wellbeing. Base 25 is a big provider in the city too that we commission to support children and young people with their mental health. They do some fantastic, really alternative therapies as such. They do one which is around like woodland therapy, so they get children who are struggling with their mental health out into the outdoors, and it's about being able to express yourself in a different way.
And I think I know that some children who are most vulnerable are closest to your heart, aren't they? And so therefore, yeah, those who have been in care and are still making great inroads, great successes in their lives, they've got some great stories.
Yeah, absolutely. So we recently held our iAwards. This is something we do every year for children who are in care in the city. So we hold an award ceremony for them and their foster parents, or for their carers who are looking after them. And this is really to celebrate their achievements, their hard work, their resilience. We know that, you know, we have... We invited 450 children and young people to collect awards. And these were sort of wide, a real range of achievements, you know, everything from doing really well at school to getting involved in their local community to overcoming personal challenges in their own lives. And it's worth saying that we know that lots of children do that, but for our children in care, sometimes that's a real battle. They've had lots of different experiences in their lives to other children, and we want to make sure that they felt really recognised, supported and encouraged to carry on.
And those successes among some children then encourage others, don't they? So they say, oh, well, they made it, therefore I can do that.
Yeah, I met with our children in care council leaders the other day as well, and they're young people who have now, one has got an apprenticeship with our council, another one has got an apprenticeship with a local government department. Another one works in our children in care services now. So actually, those experience of care experience young people provide value in supporting children who are going through that, through the care system as well. And, you know, we see ourselves as counsellors, as a city, as a local authority, as the corporate parents of those children for whatever reason who can't live with their birth parents. And we want to, you know, you'd recognise your own child, wouldn't you, Chris, for doing something good, for really overcoming adversity in their lives. And as their corporate parents, we don't see there's a reason why we shouldn't, you know, fulfil that role as well.
Now, I've always said you've got the best job in Cabinet, children and young people, and you were Councillor of the Year, Young Councillor of the Year, not long ago as well, but you've decided you're going to have a break after these elections.
Yeah, so it's mixed feelings, really. So it's might be my choice to step down as a councillor. I'm, you know, really, really going to miss it. I absolutely love my role. I love my job. I love making a difference in people's lives. And I think you can hear from the way I talk about young people that children, especially in the city, have held a real place in my heart over the years that I've been a councillor and before. But yeah, lots of reasons why. So
having a life, you know, you want to have a life.
I think as millennials, you know, I say this to my partner all the time, I struggle to relax, I struggle to take time out to do things in our own lives and for myself as well, and I sometimes feel guilty, so I'm always sat at home thinking there's something more useful that I could be doing with my time than watching a film or you know, something like that, or reading a book. I always think, oh, you know, there's something more useful that I could be doing. I've also got a full-time job as well. I work in aerospace, so I'm taking some time out too. And I think that politicians especially don't like admitting that they need a break or they need time with their family. It's seen as a weakness for some reason. I don't really like that. But yeah, the bottom line is I want to spend some more time with my family and focus on, you know, my career and my family. It's a big part of my life that I haven't put front and centre for a few years. So yeah.
That's Councillor Beverley Mehmedabadi. If you want to know more about what's happening in half term, then go to yowolves.co.uk. Best wishes to Beverley as she takes a change. Maybe it goes in a different direction, putting family first, perhaps, having worked so hard as a councillor over recent years. Councillor Obeida Ahmed is the cabinet member for Digital City and Resources in the City of Wolverhampton Council. And when I welcomed her onto my show, I said, it's your first time here.
Hi, Chris. Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. Yeah, first time for everything, okay?
Indeed. Yeah, welcome. It's good to have you on board. And your role within the City Cabinet is a fairly newly created one, wasn't it? So tell us a little bit about what you do and why your role was created.
So originally, I was the Cabinet Member for Digital City, and the Council recognised the importance of digital going forward in terms of having a modern, thriving economy. And putting in place a cabinet portfolio dedicated to digital was our recognition of how important it is going forward and how serious we were about making those changes in the city and for our residents. So I was part of one of the cogs on the way to making us a smart city.
And some of the things you're doing now is that small cells are being fitted. Tell us, for those of us who are completely ignorant about it, tell us what they are.
So small cells. So we understand that mobile data traffic is expected to double annually, given the capacity from smartphones, and we're just doing so much more now with our devices and online. So we recognise that the wireless networks might not be able to cope with that, and it's about having these smart cells allows us to give us more capacity going forward to be able to deal with that data. Yeah. So what the council did, we put out expressions of interest for code operators. They wanted to utilise our street furniture to roll out these small cells across the city. Luckily for us, BT were the first ones to roll out these small cells.
And I'm assuming, you know, this means things happen quicker and therefore reception is better, downloads are faster as well for people in the city centre.
Absolutely. It's about going forward. We're there for future proofing the city for when things are going to get better, more data orientated. So, yeah.
And is this a demand really all cities need to sort of meet nowadays in order to try to boost our economy?
We do, absolutely. But we're really lucky in Wolverhampton because we were lucky enough to get a grant initially from £4 million grant to roll out our £4.9 million grant to connect 170 public sector buildings for the full fibre and put this infrastructure in place going forward. Because without the infrastructure, you're not going to be able to cope with the demand.
And, you know, I say it's a new cabinet post. Have you got a background in digital stuff, or have you had to learn all this? You know, what brought you and what gave you this portfolio and enabled you to do it? Because you still, I think for people who talk digital, sometimes it does sound like a different language for the rest of us.
Absolutely. And I have completely no digital background at all.
That probably helps.
My skills are about the same as you, just about the smartphone, that's it.
Right.
But I'm not here to be the expert. I'm here to make sure that the council is doing what it needs to and making it easy for people like you and me to be able to use digital going forward.
So this is all exciting stuff really for the city centre, isn't it? I'm part of lots of changes that are happening.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, it's about our whole approach for the whole city, where we want to be taking it with the civic cause, with the events. We want to be a city that's there, ready for the future, for our events, and bringing loads of people into the city to come and have a good time here, as well as benefit our residents.
And we had a bit of good digital news this week, in as much as our sister company, which is called Wolverhampton DAB Limited, has won the right to roll out digital audio broadcasting DAB across the city, and that'll work with lots of community organisations as well. So that's very exciting for us too.
Oh, congratulations. That is really exciting. And that's what we want. We want more of that. We want Wolverhampton to be leading the way in terms of digital across the country.
And one of the things, you know, excites me about it is that it's not just us. Obviously, it's another way you can hear us, obviously, on FM, which has been really important for people, so that you do have a non-digital way of listening, as well as obviously smart speakers and online and whatever. But actually, it's working with the other community groups across the city. You know, many of them have said they're going to be a part of this, one of them being Ramadan Radio, and So therefore, we're working with others who across the city. It's not just about us. It's about, again, helping to digitise the city.
Absolutely. And this is the thing with digital. Sometimes people hear digital and you kind of think, well, what if I can't switch on a computer or a smartphone? I haven't got the access. And we recognise that. For us, we want to be 100% digitally, but we want to take everyone on that journey with us. And it's about taking our residents there, making sure they've got the devices, they've got the skills to use it. And even those who still don't want to, they've still got access to the normal platforms as well. Absolutely, we recognise that.
I mean, I'm glad you haven't got a background in all this. So you have to learn it as you go along, like the rest of us do as well.
I've got a great team in the Civic here. Shout out to them.
That's Councillor Obeida Ahmed, the Cabinet Member for Digital City and Resources. There is something quite reassuring about the fact that she is not the technical expert and she needs the help from people at the Civic Centre in order to help her with all that as well. John Denley is the Director of Public Health at the City of Wolverhampton Council. Lots of stuff happening at the moment. Just completed HIV testing week. And as it's now ended, I asked John, does that mean that people have missed the boat as far as getting tested is concerned?
No, Chris. What we have had is a really good response last week for people who have come forward to have a HIV test. And we had a dedicated offer during last week. But what it does highlight is the importance of doing so. And it does also highlight that if people are worried about something, sometimes, or particularly HIV or so forth, that people don't come forward as easy as they might. Right. And I think what it showed us last week was if you advertise something and you can steer people towards services, they'll access them. So basically, if anybody ever wants a HIV test in the city, just get in contact with your local sexual health services and we'll get that arranged. It's really simple, really quick. And we've got a really good record in the city of identifying a high level of testing, which is really good. What we haven't got a good record of is people presenting late, shall we say?
Yeah.
In terms of,
and is there stigma around this still? Is there some stigma around this as well, which is why people don't present?
I think so. Yeah, I think there still is a little bit. As with a number of things, really, a number of areas where you have to go to various different clinics for contact with healthcare professionals. But the services are so open and so welcoming.
Yeah.
Really wouldn't worry about it at
completely
all.
Non-judgmental, open, welcoming, and make the most of the opportunity would be the message. Also got COVID-19 pop-up clinics still going on. We need to remember that COVID is still here, even though we've got means of tackling it through vaccines, but it's still around.
The hospital still admitting patients who have been admitted because of COVID-19, which shows that and the majority of those people who are admitted aren't those who've completed their full course. On that basis, it's still really important if people think, well, I've had one, I've had another, get your booster. You had a real opportunity to do it. But we've got pop-up clinics still knocking around the city, which you put on your website.
Yeah,
we're not finishing that within Wolverhampton. They'll still be available. And what we have done in Wolverhampton is we've closed the gap right the way through But from last August, we had a gap where our most deprived areas had a lower uptake. We've closed some of that gap and age gap uptake as well. It shows that actually, if you take clinics into the communities, people will come forward. So have a look around, look on your website, and you'll be able to get those dates and access to those clinics as they're knocking around.
Yeah, I'll put it on when this interview goes out on the podcast as well. They'll be able to get that information there as well. But we keep coming back to the message, you need to protect yourself with these vaccinations because it is what's making the difference.
That's it. It's vaccinations are there for a reason. There's lots of debate around it. There isn't that much debate these days, given you can see the evidence which is in our everyday life. Equally, testing, which we just talked about with HIV, if you get a test, earlier diagnosis really helps. All these interventions are there for a reason, and they are to help people, help you have a long, healthy life. And that's what we're in the business of.
Now, obviously, what slipped down the agenda during the pandemic has been the general health checks, looking after yourself, getting your blood pressure checked, all those kind of things as well. But that's coming, again, a priority for you more and more and more. And again, as you were saying earlier, it's important to get out there. So the Mander Centre is a place where you can come to get those checks.
Yeah, so we all experienced 2 years of disruption in in access to healthcare. The things that we used to have routinely didn't happen as they happened. And we use the phrase baked in quite a bit. There might be quite a lot of conditions out there that haven't been identified over this period. So our cabinet member, Councillor Jasbir Jaspal, basically prioritised NHS health checks as a way of getting as many people in age groups. So the NHS health check age group is 40 to 74. It's 40 to 74. Get as many people invited and available as possible so we could just pick up some of these things and do something about it if they are identified. And what we're doing with the Mander Centre, which was so successful around the COVID-19 vaccination program, which is really quick and convenient and so forth, we're starting to do the health checks there. If you're not called for a health check in the Mander Centre, you can still pop in and have a little check of your blood pressure and so right. forth, just to keep an eye on things. But there are people who will be specifically called just to start getting that ball rolling, and that data will go directly back into your GP system. And if anything's identified, it then takes you forward to accessing treatment or medication, whatever you need to address any of the issues out there.
And you say calls, I presume that comes out from your GP then, and you've got the option of going to the Mander Centre or maybe to your GP. Are GP practices also rolling out these health checks?
Yes, yeah, just about every general practice in the city is starting to do that. It's not a routine GP appointment. It's either by the practice with a practice nurse or so forth, and you could be invited through a number of routes. It could be a direct telephone call, it could be a text, or it could be a letter. What I would strongly advise is just take the opportunity to come along, get yourself checked out. That will help. It will help enormously.
Brilliant. And a couple of days left for the lifestyle survey, and you've incentivised this as a £5 shopping voucher that can be used at the community shops across the city, and also £2 for charities that you can support as well. So, again, take part in the lifestyle survey because it really does inform the way you work in the future.
It really is. So many specific policies are based on that will be based on what we find from the lifestyle survey. So we'll get a better understanding how people are living their lives day to day at the moment. What we did do, which is why we're incentivizing it, a lot of areas would choose to commission or buy this service in, get a company to come in and do the work. But what our cabinet member decided to do is say, actually, let's just invest the money that we would have paid for another company coming in to do work and invest it and put a couple of pounds or £5 voucher back into the pocket of the people of the city if they complete the survey. So we've done that, and there has been such a great response. We're up to about 7,000 respondents. We've got another few days left. And on that basis, we can really say with confidence what the behaviours are of the people of the city and put services in place to help if needed.
And that's statistically very significant, isn't it? That level of number, really. And it's nice to hear that health is also following the Wolverhampton Pound principle.
Yeah, we've learned so much for COVID. If you think about what we did with testing, all our testing programs were undertaken by our faith groups.
Yeah.
Throughout the city, we didn't bring external organisations in. We used our own. Our own communities to spread the word, and it was better for communities. So we've learned so much from that. Then why don't we apply it to other areas? And that was similar to what we talked about just earlier about the health checks being in the Mander Centre. Let's not ignore what we achieved, and we can apply those sort of things and the same methodology to different areas to help people in the city.
That's Director of Public Health, John Denley, and that's it from this week's podcast. Don't forget you can join me every Sunday lunchtime between 12 and 2 at WCRFM. You can listen online at wcrfm.com, and also you can tell your smart speaker to play WCRFM. If you've got any stories or news for me, you can always email me at chris@wcrfm.com, and I look forward to you joining me next time.